ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Without any,
Atma Jnana Ananda,
Atma Jnana Ananda,
satisfied in self-realization.
Satisfied in self-realization.
Yuktasya, who was qualified with? Atma Sadrusha.
Atma Sadrusha.
And exactly like himself.
Sruta,
in education.
Sila,
in character.
Achara,
in behavior. Rupa,
in beauty.
Audarya,
in
magnanimity.
Guna,
possessing of these qualities. Navasa Udarya. Nine brothers born of the same womb. Angaja, sons. Babuhu,
were born.
Mithunam,
twin brother and sister.
Cha,
and
Yaviyasyam,
in the youngest.
Haryayam,
wife.
Ya,
who,
to,
but.
Tatra,
there.
Kuman,
the male child.
Tam,
him.
Parama Bhagavatam,
the
most exalted devotee.
Rajarishi,
of saintly kings.
Pravaram,
most honored.
Bharatam,
Bharat Maharaj. Sut Srishta,
having given
up. Mrika Sariram,
the
body of a deer. Charama Sarirena,
with
the last body.
Vipratvam,
being a Brahmana. Natam,
obtained.
Ahuru,
Daise.
Translation and Gopal Bhai. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, my dear king, who's the king?
Parikshit
Maharaj, just the king, who is the king? My dear king, Parikshit Maharaj in other words, after giving up the body of Ajaya, Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj took birth in a very pure Brahmana family. There was a Brahmana boy who belonged to the dynasty of Angira. He was fully qualified with Brahminical qualifications. He could control his mind and senses, and he had studied the Vedic literatures and other subsidiary literatures. He was expert in giving charity, and he was always satisfied, tolerant, very gentle, learned, and non-envious. What is non-envious? He was self-realized and engaged in devotional service of the Lord. He remained always entranced. He had nine equally qualified sons by his first wife, and by his second wife he begot twins, a brother and a sister, of which the male child was said to be the topmost devotee and the foremost of saintly kings, Bharat Maharaj. This then is the story of the birth he took after giving up the body of a deer. Most of us probably know what is happening, but just I'll set the context soon, but before then, let's read the book. Yeah? Prabhupada writes, Bharat Maharaj was a great devotee, but he did not attain success in one life. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that a devotee who does not fulfill his devotional duties in one life is given the chance to be born in a fully qualified Brahmana family or a rich Kshatriya or Vaishya family. Suchi Nam Sri Matam Gehe, Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text number 41. Bharat Maharaj was the firstborn son of Maharaj Rishabh in the rich Kshatriya family. But due to his willful negligence of his spiritual duties and his excessive attachment to an insignificant Jiya, he was obliged to take birth as a son of Bhajiya. However, due to his strong position as a devotee, he was gifted with the remembrance of his past life. Being repentant, he remained in a solitary forest and always thought of Krishna. Then he was given the chance to take birth in a family of good Brahmana family. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshurudhidhamyena Asmai Shri Guruvena Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Yadha
नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवाणी पाश्चात्यादेशाकारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैताधर श्रीवासवी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके हरे कृष्ण सो वी आर द फिफ्थ कैंटो ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम चिंतनाय एट द मोमेंट एंड वी आर कमिंग टू द एपिसोड ऑफ द स्टोरी ऑफ भरत महाराज हु वी नो ड्यू टू हिज अनसक्सेसफुल कंप्लीशन ऑफ हिज स्पिरिचुअल एंडेवर्स did not reach perfection in that life when he was Bharat Maharaj. Then due to his attachment, bodhi attachment toward deer, that he took the deer as a pet and kept it in his ashram, he was attached to the deer, and therefore he took the body of a deer in the next life. And after that, and by the grace of the Lord, he could remember his past life and he was Bharat. And then he also remembers and was cognizant of the fact that he had not fully completed his spiritual quest, and therefore, you know, in his deer body, he could remember all that. And then, when he could have birth, say this episode, of course, before that, he would have possibly taken many years, we don't know. I don't know whether Bhagavan can speak about it, but we are talking about these three lives at the moment, from Bharat Maharaj to deer, and then he took birth as Jat Bharat. And that is what this father is mentioning, that he took birth as Jat Bharat, and his father was Angira, or in the dynasty of Angira. That dynasty is explained that it was very pious and righteous family, very, very pious devotee family, and he took birth as a Brahmana. So that's what we are talking about. Now, this is interesting because, not so much in Hinduism, or in our very literature, because we face this, we are aware of this quite regularly. About the fact that the soul goes through many lifetimes. No? For us, it's not like far out moment when somebody dies, not that we will be born again. But in a lot of other traditions and cultures, you know, when we talk about past life or next life, it's like alien to them because they think that this is all in all. And this particular episode at the moment is actually quite interesting in our Vedic literature because it is not talking about this lifetime. It is not talking about the next lifetime, but actually it is talking about multi-lifetime. These three lifetimes, explains what happens in one, then in the second, then in the third. And a lot of times these kind of questions also get asked, to say, if we do this in this lifetime, for those who accept that there is next life, let's just start with that paradigm for now, that we accept there is next life, then the question gets asked, well, what happens after death? And then what happens after the next death? So here we see that Sukadeva Goswami telling Parikshit Maharaj, simultaneously Maitreya Muni telling Vidura, that what actually happens in three lifetimes. I can't recall, studying three lifetimes so far in my Vidura Bhagavatam, but I'm sure there would be some more. But this is a good example when we can quote, when we talk about three lifetimes in one shot, immediately one after the other. So that's pretty interesting. Now what we learn from here, is that in the lesson that we can drive out of this is that if you take the example of Bharat Maharaj, who was, if I'm not wrong, he reached the stage of Bhava, right? And then he fell down from there because he got excessively attached to a deer and then he took birth. Because that's what he remembered at the time of his death. So Krishna tells us, whatever we remember at the time of death, that stage we will attain without faith. Leave our body. So here he attained the body of a deer. And then after that, his spiritual bank balance was kept intact. He could remember all that, and then he continued from that point forward in his third life. So what we learn from Bharat Maharaj's pastime is that when we cannot undo, we can rebuild. And this is interesting because in our laptop, in our keyboard, there is an undo button. But in the real life keyboard, there is no undo button. There is no backspace as well. It only goes forward. There is only one arrow in terms of time. And I'll talk about time very soon. But let's just talk about these actions. Now, when we do an act, there is absolutely no chance we can not do that act again, because it's done, it's history now. Now, consequences and the reactions, we can deal with it, and there are mechanisms, to reduce the consequences or to counteract the consequences and all that. That is all there. But in terms of, you cannot undo what has been done. And that is why it is absolutely imperative, and by the way, I'm also a student of this wisdom, so it's not that I have mastered all this, and I'm speaking from the Vyasas, and I'm learning as I'm going, but I'm sharing what I've read and what I've understood, not necessarily what I've realized. Yeah? So when we speak something, and sometimes we know what we speak, a lot of times we speak good things, and some other times we speak not so many good things, especially when we are angry, then we know the sweet word that comes out of our tongue is something that people don't want to hear. But the reality is, once those has been unleashed from our tongue, it cannot be retracted. Once it's done, it cannot be undone. But we can rebuild. If we have damaged somebody's emotions, then as we have hurt somebody's emotion, we have done something wrong, we can take actions to possibly make it just. But it cannot be undone. Once we have done an action as well, it cannot be undone. So here, what has happened, Bharat Maharaj shows us that once he and our scriptures include this pastime to demonstrate to us some lessons, and he said, if he has got attached to the deha at the time of death, then by the law of Krishna's arrangement, he has to take the birth of a deha. And it's a warning and a lesson to us to be not to attached on a material platform. Caring for the deer from his side was no wrong, but he took it as a material compassion. That I am not if I am not there, what will happen to the deer, so on and so forth. Now most of us are not going to make this mistake, because I don't know how many people who have no deer as a pet. But a lot of people I do know have got a lot of other animals as a pet. Especially in the country that we live, dogs are more luxurious life than human beings. They get driven in the best of the cars and live in the best of the houses. And one whole aisle in the supermarkets is dedicated to the pet food, from package to canned to whatever, to dry to wet. So the attachment to the dog is there, or attachment to the cat is there. If you go to a place like Italy, they absolutely love their cats. It's the same in UK. In Australia, of course, it's dog. So the attachment to the dog and the cat is there. Now, if they think of the cat and the dog at the time we leave our body, and that's just as Bharat Maharaj, notwithstanding that he was already at the very advanced platform, almost to perfection, the Bhava state, he still fell down. So what we speak about, the dog, Dick and Harry's like us, if we get attached to the dog and the cat, and we leave our body without perfecting our Krishna consciousness, then we know we can actually extrapolate what kind of body we will get. And that is dangerous. That is dangerous. So we have to be careful and not to be overly, or not to be attached at all to anything that is on a material level. And here we can see that Bharat Maharaj has a very high level of consciousness to the Bhava stage, very, very high level of consciousness. But still he fell. So what lessons we learn is that if we don't guard our consciousness carefully, it may not be the deer that we may get attracted to at the time of death. It may be something else. But it can be, it can be some other allurement. Can be some other material allurement that attracts us, and then we have to come back into this material world and then go through that journey again, which is quite miserable. So why would we do that? Just as if we are living in a, let's say if we are living in a wooden mansion and there is a small fire spark. Now what can that small fire spark do? It has got the ability to fully bend down the mansion if it is unattended to, correct? Just a small spark of fire can burn down a big mansion. It's unattended. Now, once the mansion is burned, it can never be unburned. It can never be unburned because it's burned, but it can be rebuilt. So similarly, those sparks of impressions that we imbibe in ourselves, you know, for example, the allurement to the Ria, or allurement to the opposite sex, or allurement to some wealth, or some enjoyment, cricket, so on and so forth, those things are those small, small sparks that can actually burn down and bring down our consciousness. And once it is down, once those impressions are there, it can never be erased. Our past impressions can never be erased because it is there forever. But it can be buried. It can be buried so down in our memory, you know, that the other impressions, if we keep copying it away, and hopefully those are the spiritual impressions, then those old material impressions that we have are buried so deep down in our consciousness that it is almost known. We are almost not cognizant to it anymore. So I'll repeat that. If we leave the spark of the fire unattended in the mansion, it can burn down the mansion. And once it's burnt, it can never be unbent, but it can be rebuilt. Similarly, if there are those sparks of material attachments in our consciousness, it can burn down our consciousness. It can bring our consciousness down. And once those impressions are there, it will be there forever. It cannot be erased. There is no erase or delete button in our consciousness. But it can be buried deep down in our consciousness that it becomes, no, to the point that we are not even aware of that we were like that, no, in some life or in this life. And if you top it up with a lot of spiritual consciousness, then that, no, then that is what carries us forward. And we don't risk this fatality of falling down as it is going to do Bharat Maharaj. No? So remember, what we cannot undo, we can rebuild. From that one lesson we can learn. Now, what we also learn, if we fast forward Bharat Maharaj's pastime, you know, from the first life to the second life when he is taken birth as a deer, by God's grace, he could remember everything in his previous life that he got a test and he fell down. So then in his third life as Jat Maharaj, he continued from that point forward. Now, this tells us the two things we are learning from our scriptures. One, that our life is of multi journey. Not that this is all in all, it's multi-journey. And at the same time, that we can, it explains why certain people take up spirituality, Krishna consciousness, very easily, very quickly, and at a very early life. Sometimes we see the youngsters coming to Krishna consciousness and they will zoom off, you know, like veterans. And sometimes, you know, we see veterans coming into Krishna consciousness and never taking off what we see people zooming off. It just doesn't happen. And how we reconcile is this, again, by, you know, analyzing this particular pastime, is that our level of spirituality does not correlate with our biological age. You understand? Our level of spirituality has got no correlation with our biological age. In other words, bhakti is not dependent on age. Somebody very junior can be very advanced devotee. Prahlad Maharaj, for example, Dhruva, for example. And somebody at a very advanced stage may not even be a devotee. That's why we see when we preach to people, no, it should not be, you know, as preachers, we should be looking at the jiva and addressing the jiva to revive this Krishna consciousness. Rather than saying, you know, that these are kids, these are all. Of course, there are different techniques to preach to different people, that is true. You know? But from our spiritual vision, we are all, you know, spiritual beings at a different stage of our biological age. So when we say somebody is a senior devotee, you know, we should not make the mistake of thinking just because somebody is elderly, he is a senior devotee. Our scriptures doesn't reconcile like that. No? Somebody who is very junior in age can also be a senior devotee. Senior devotee does not necessarily mean a devotee who has seen the years. Sometimes we think that those who have seen the years have become senior devotees. No? Not that necessarily. Our spirituality has nothing to do with our age. No? So there is, and Prabhupada gave us the example of, you know, the wet wood and the dry wood, or wet grass and the dry grass. If the grass is dry, then a small bit of spark will ignite the fire immediately, no reason at all. So that dry wood is like that person who had a lot of, you know, agyasukriti, osukriti, all devotional service, all pious activity, all punya in his previous life. And when we know, when he is exposed to Krishna consciousness, he very intuitively takes it up, without too much of nudging. Little bit of spark, he will just take it up, Krishna consciousness. And you could be one of them. But at the same time, you know, if the grass is wet, Prabhupada said, then if you try to ignite the fire, it will not ignite. Because you have to work so hard to dry that grass. Once it's dried up, then it will ignite the spiritual spark of Krishna consciousness. No? So it's a multi-life journey. It just depends where we are and where we left in the past life. So the third thing that we learn from this past time is the fact that our consciousness, in this case, if you look at Bharat Maharaj, you know, his consciousness where he was at the time of leaving his body, when he was meditating on the deer, then he took the birth of the deer, and then he continued from there as Jagannath and completed his Krishna consciousness. Perfected his Krishna consciousness. So we could see that there was a little blip in his consciousness from coming up to being dragged down by Maya Devi. And then he recovered, and then went higher than where he left in his previous lifetime. So what he tells us that our own, and this is good news for us, yeah? I mean, we know this, I'm just trying to say it a little bit more energy into it. Our consciousness is recoverable. And that is good news, yeah? Because as sadhakas, you know, when we are progressing in our Krishna consciousness, time to time, you know, there is that blip. Time to time, we do fall down. There is like that coming up, and well, hopefully it's coming like this, in a curve, in a line graph or something you call it. Now, if our consciousness is, if this is the y and the x axis, and if our consciousness is doing this, but overall it's coming up, well, that's probably not so bad. I mean, if it's only coming up, it's great. But if it's looping, or if it's volatile, but it's at least, you know, if you do an average incremental increase, if it's going up, that's probably not too bad. But if it's going this and going dwindling down, then it's terrible for us, you know, it's bad news for us. But in either of the three situations, whether it's volatile, whether it's constantly exponentially growing, and whether it is volatile and growing, and when it is volatile and dwindling, in either cases, the good news is that our consciousness is always recoverable. We can always intensify our Krishna consciousness at any point in time and recover and re-establish and reawaken our full Krishna consciousness. But equally, what is not recoverable is time. And our consciousness and time is both a relationship. And we can see it here, as I said, this past time is not an episode of only one lifetime when something happened to some person and then what was at the end of it. No, this is about three lifetimes. And if you think of three lifetimes, we are struggling in one lifetime. If we have to go through three, and for that matter 30 and 300 or 3000 lifetimes, and Prabhupada tells us that we have already been through billions and billions of trillions of lifetimes already. So if we want to be intelligent, then now if we have got consciousness, let's say consciousness improvement on one hand, and time is the factor on the other hand, what is the proper synergy? I'm going to ask somebody. Yeah? We have got our goal as increasing our consciousness, verifying our consciousness, elevating our consciousness. On the other hand, we have got this time factor that can bring it down, bring it up. Now, what is the proper synthesis of this? What will an expert do in this situation? Okay, you lost me, right? You lost me or you didn't?
Does it deal with
So the experiment will, what we will do, we will try to maximize and get full elevation of this consciousness in the shortest of time. Because you know, if I leave it for too late, I don't know what will happen. And we know that time in the material world is Krishna's energy, that's Krishna himself. But we know that time is Krishna's tough love. And I'll explain what I mean by tough love very soon. But time is that thing that we want to hasten our Krishna consciousness purification so that we can quickly get out of this material world. Otherwise time can create havoc on us. Unless we have become fully purified devotee, then we are beyond time. But until we are in the clutches of the time, then it's a very dangerous situation to be in. So Bharat Balaji could not fully perfect his Krishna consciousness in one lifetime. Unfortunately, he fell down. And then there was that, let's say, almost like a hibernation period of a deer life where he couldn't do anything, either up or down, and then he revived in his head life. So expert, intelligent person, what we will do, he will try to purify his, he will want to perfect his Krishna consciousness in this lifetime only, rather than taking risk, because we don't know what's coming next. And that is why Prabhupada told us that finish up this business in this lifetime. Go back to Godhead in this lifetime. One lifetime is enough for us to finish our material attachments and go back to Godhead in this life. And that is exactly why he said this. Don't take the risk of what is happening in next lifetime. Purify your Krishna consciousness in this lifetime. And why he said that is because, and Prabhupada quotes many times, you know, Chanakya Pandit, who said something very beautiful about time. What did he say? Chanakya Pandit said that time, a moment of time, not just about any length of time, just a sheer moment of time is more valuable than millions of dollars worth of gold. Now, we know in the historic time there was no money as such, there was barter system, there was no money, there was no plastic money, there was no credit cards. These days everything is in plastic money. So there was gold, as a means of wealth, measuring your wealth. So he said, a moment of time is more valuable than millions of dollars of gold. Now, what does it actually mean if you think of it? Because we all have moments of time, but we don't have millions of dollars of gold. But if somebody had, given that you already have time, but if you also have millions of dollars of gold, which one would you be ready to part with? If somebody asks for it. Somebody said, give me 2 minutes of your time. And somebody said, give me the millions of dollars of gold you get. Which one would you give? Which one would you give unresistingly? Time. Because for us, millions of dollars of gold is definitely more valuable than 5 minutes. You say, take these 5 minutes. No, but I'm not going to give you the gold. Go away. So, that's why I'm saying, let's analyze what Chanakya Pandit means, and Prabhupada quotes him. So therefore there is some merit in this proverb, that a moment of time is more valuable than millions of dollars of gold. Now why is it so? Considering our disposition of willingly giving away time, but possibly the money that we have. Two factors that we can understand, that it makes it very clear why time is more important. Wealth is again recoverable. And wealth is also storable. Okay? Wealth is recoverable and it is also storable. If we have got millions of dollars of gold, and for whatever reason we have lost that wealth, we can certainly rebuild that wealth. I had said it, that it is rebuildable. We can rebuild that wealth. And until the time we lose it, we can store that $1 million as well. So it has got both the secrecy. Now, why is a moment of time, and for that matter, let's just say time now, why is time more valuable than wealth? It's because time can neither be recovered nor it can be stored. One moment past is past forever. It's absolutely never going to come back. We cannot recover it. And at the same time, I cannot say that, I'll freeze time now. I'll put something to use, I'll freeze time, and then I'll come back. I'll store this time for now, and I'll come back and reuse it. No, it's not possible. It cannot destroy it, it cannot recover it. Whereas with wealth is less valuable in that particular sense, is because you can always recover. In this case, there is insurance in here. The house can be before you get insurance. And what else was there in, you know, the job keeper and job seeker and everything else, but you can have some means of getting some wealth there. But not many time. So time is absolutely important. Most valuable thing, you know, in one sense is time. And therefore we have to make the best use of each particular moment. And now if we put it together, the time that we have, that time, if we don't use it, intelligently, then it's lost. What we do, though, and this is Kali Yuga mentality, yeah? What we do, the fact that gold is less valuable than time, wealth is less valuable than time, but we put more value on wealth, and we use our wealth very, very, very carefully, correct? Now, we will spend our dollar very carefully. If we have to buy one refrigerator, then we will go and ask Siri, you know, all these different research we will do, what is the price in Good Guys, in Harvey Norman, you know, in wherever, you know, in Bunnings and all that. We will do all this research and then try to see, you know, where is the cheapest one and the best one, and then we will part with our money. Huh? If we have to buy an airline ticket, all the researches we will do, call 5 different real estates, travel agents, and seek out where is the cheapest flight, so on and so forth. How else we have to buy, we spend month and month, analyzing what is the cheapest and most effective and economical thing to buy. Cars, no? So we spend so much time. But when it comes to time, then we don't think so carefully. Next, we'll see it tomorrow. We won't do it today, we'll do it tomorrow. And sometimes what happens, actually our mind eats our head. Our mind eats our head by saying, not only about today, I mean this is the danger of our mind. The mind can tell us, does tell us, at least it tells me sometimes, cannot be you. But the mind sometimes, you know, tries to fool me by saying that if you don't tell Hare Krishna now in the morning, it's okay, you can finish it up at lunchtime. Never tells me that I will die by 10 o'clock. Never tells me. Bharat Maharaj also died, you know. It never tells me you die by lunchtime, so change now. It never tells me. Honestly, it never tells me. And sometimes at lunchtime, you tell me, don't worry, you can change it in the evening. So it always tries to prolong my miseries in the material world. Always tries to prolong my miseries by just extending and extending my illusion. And this, what it also tells me, and I'll embarrassingly, you know, share with you, it says, okay, if you don't perfect your Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, so it's not telling me about just the morning to the afternoon to the evening, and not telling me about tomorrow or next month. Sometimes it tells me, oh, well, you are doing your level best, but it's not end of it. If you don't perfect your Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, you will take it in your next lifetime. And next lifetime may be better, because, you know, you will pick it from your day one, because of your samsaras in this lifetime, you will pick it from there. So you will be born in a good Brahmana family, you will be born in a good, you know, rich, you know, American family. So you won't have this, you know, trouble of finding a job and job seeker and driving Uber and Uber leads and all that. You won't have this in your life. You will start from there. This is such a good argument from the mind, yeah? But what it doesn't tell me, that you will still have problems in that life. Problems will come. It may be true, there may be some truth, you know, that this could be my next life. But problems will come. It just doesn't mean that I'm a Brahmana, I will not have problems in my life in the next life. It will come. So it doesn't tell you. So we have to be very, very vigilant against our silly, you know, demoniac mind, not to fool us again and again and again, you know, and telling us to waste our time. Time is essential. Time is short. Time is important. And time is most valuable. And therefore we have to, you know, manage our time carefully, very, very carefully. So, then, and I'll cover the last one and I'll stop there, any questions here. Then, now how do we raise our consciousness? So far what we have seen is, now I'll just quickly recap. We saw that Bharat Maharaj's pastime from the tree, it demonstrated to us especially that there is a multi-life chain. what we speak of this life. He talks about three lives in one shot. Yeah? That's what we spoke about. Then we spoke about the fact that our consciousness is recoverable. Because if we bleed, we can always rebuild. No? But at the same time, what I just spoke about is that our time is not recoverable. So therefore, time becomes more valuable than our wealth. So time has to be effectively managed and properly utilized in Krishna consciousness. So we spoke about consciousness and time. No. So then we see that our goal is to elevate our consciousness, and the highest consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Now how do we develop the Krishna consciousness? In that endeavor to develop the Krishna consciousness, time to time we fall. And even if we are going up, sometimes it seems to be little toxic, not toxic, but little volatile. So how do we march forward? Now this is the same thing that we see, the situation for Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada quotes that, chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, translation and little bit about that. So if you look at, of course Arjuna has been put in bewilderment by the Lord to the Yoga Maya, to teach us some lesson. But what Arjuna demonstrates to us that initially, he is in the Lila Vedistan, he is in a material platform, because his reasons not to do his duty, he gives very, very material reasons, all materially oriented, material compassion, material bodies, consequences to the material actions, all on the material platform. Now, how does Krishna elevate him? In other words, how do we elevate ourselves from the lessons of Arjuna's questions and Arjuna's situation? So, three things, very easy to remember, if you remember these three things. There is Jagat, there is Jiva, and there is Jagdish. There is Jagat, there is Jiva, and there is Jagdish. Three J's. Triple J, is a music. Triple J, isn't it? Triple N, Triple J, so Jiva, Jagat, and Jagat, Jiva, and Jagdish. You can remember in that order. Jagat is material nature, material world. Jiva is the soul that we are, and Jagdish is the Lord. So, Arjuna is at that moment, on a Jagat platform. Now everything material oriented, material body, material compassion, material consequences, material reasons, material duties, and so on and so forth. So the first thing that Krishna does to him is lifts his consciousness from Jagat to Jiva. Krishna tells him that you are not this material body, but you are a spiritual being. First transformation, if you like, from Jagat, material, to the platform of Jiva. Because once we come to the platform of Jiva, we are on a spiritual platform now, not on a material platform. We may not be perfect yet, but at least we are conscious of the fact that we are spiritual and not material. Our vision changes now at this stage. So first stage of consciousness elevation can be from Jagat to Jiva. Once Krishna raises into the Jiva platform in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, because chapter 1 is Krishna's confusion and bewilderment and confusion. Chapter 2 is about fixing him, bringing him to the spiritual platform or Jiva platform at least, and denouncing that we are this body. Then what happens if you look at chapter 3, 4 and 5 of Bhagavad Gita, it's more about karma. So much so that Prabhupada translates chapter 3 as karma yoga, and chapter 5 as karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. But it's, at the moment it's more about the karma platform. In other words, you do your duties, you do your activities, but not only on a bodily platform. You do your karma, but not only on a bodily platform. Understand that you are the soul and do your activity now, offer the results to the Lord. So that's karma. But of course, Krishna has to take Arjuna to the bhakti platform. So when he takes into chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita, which is Dhyana Yoga, Krishna now elevates Arjuna from Jagat to Jiva, now finally to Jagdish in chapter 5, quite elaborately. But then also, the meditation on Jagat or on Jagadish, on Krishna, is more on a meditative platform, of Dhyana Yoga, meditating on the Lord. Okay? And there is Jagat. There is Jagadish. So you can see the transformation of elevation in Krishna in his consciousness from Jagat, material compassion, material body, material duties, material reactions, so on and so forth, to the Jiva platform of there is a spiritual being, and then eventually to Jagadish, they do everything for the pleasure of the Lord. But the transformation and the order of the Bhagavad Gita is after his confusion on the bodily platform in 1, to the Jiva platform in 2, to the Jagadish, or to the Jiva platform spiritual activities in 3, 4 and 5, and then in 6 Krishna introduces Jagadish. which is meditate on Him. And how does He conclude chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita? Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana sarvabham bhajate yomam samayukta tamomata. Of all the meditators of the yogis, the topmost is who? Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana, the one who thinks of me. And there is Krishna's introduction to bhakti right at the end of chapter 6. A very, very sweet, no? and dramatic, no? and introduction to bhakti. And that's why chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita, as we know, it starts from bhakti yoga only. No mucking around, no direct to bhakti yoga. That is, meditate on Krishna, raise your consciousness to Krishna consciousness, go back to Godhead in this lifetime. So it starts with bhakti yoga. So, like that. So the point I was making, remember the three J's, if we ever get allured by the deer or something equivalent to the deer, to be anything, then remember that is that jagat, no? Is that a material element? And immediately raise our consciousness to jiva, that is, that we are a spiritual being, we put another reason altogether. And then we won't remember that it is Krishna that we have to meditate on at any point in time, because time is valuable. Now, why does this happen? My last point. Now, why does this happen? Why does this material for a sincere devotee who is marching on his Krishna consciousness, material agreements still come? But we don't have to say welcome. But we still end up saying welcome to this, all these desires. No? Sometimes, no? We will. One thing we can remember is that these desires for somebody who is chanting, reading Bhagavad Gita, you know, coming to the temple regularly, eating prasadam, and so on, you know, for this kind of practitioner, you know, it is the spike that we have to be careful with. If we are an army officer, you know, on the battlefield, then it is the gun or the sword of the opposition party that we have to be careful. No? We know what the enemy is going to attack us with, so we have to be careful of the bullet shots. So similarly, our consciousness, those bullet shots, come in spikes. You know what I mean? Because they will not come, you know, they will not, for a devotee who is well situated but of course not perfected, for him it will come in spikes. In other words, it will attack us and then just fool us to say, you know, engage, indulge in this, you'll be okay. And when the other side of mind, which has been purified, tells us, don't do this, this is not good for your Krishna consciousness, all those things, the mind will start also trying to call, but the dog that is barking loudest will suppress the intelligence, and to the point that we will not even pay attention to the good advice of the intelligence, and will succumb and subjugate our intentions to the desire of the mind to do something unrighteous and before. But it comes in a spike. And then once that spike has settled down, either we have committed something wrong or we have not committed something wrong. In either case, that spike will go away and retract. And then our intelligence rises again because we have got that consciousness. No? It will rise again to say, oh my goodness, lucky I didn't do this. Or it might say, oh my Krishna, yet I succumb to it. Both will happen. Both can happen. So what we can do, if you think of it, what we can do two things. We can do many things actually. And these are, let's say, the takeaways over there. No? If we know through our experience that we are battling with the spikes of material desires, then what we can do is when those spikes are not there, intensify our Krishna consciousness. No? When the spikes are not there, then when we are chanting, when we are hearing, when we are leading the kirtan, when we are participating in the kirtan, at that time maximize it, maximize our attention, so that our consciousness is lifted to a large degree. During the non-spiky times, that's all. So, because what happens if we do that, then when the spike comes, we are well placed to counteract it. Beg from Krishna when the spike is not there. Beg from him that I don't get allured by another desire next time. Beg, very, very prayerfully, our chanting, our hearing, our kirtan during the non-spiky time. So then, when the spike comes, we can counter it. Now, as I said, the coronavirus will not that I'm an expert, by the way, but just as a small energy. They say the coronavirus, we can avoid coronavirus by increasing our immunization because there is no vaccine. There is some now, apparently. But when there was no vaccine in the early days of coronavirus, the biggest 5 was immunization, your own strength. No? So increase your immunization, then you can deal with the virus if it comes. So the virus of the material element, when this 5 comes, we can immunize ourselves to it if we have you know, built our consciousness to a high level, so we can fight it. But if for whatever reasons we still fall victim to the careless desire of the mind, then after it has gone away, and either we have done the activity, unrighteous activity, or not done the activity, in either case, again when it has gone away, we beg Krishna and talk to him to say, oh my Lord, it happened to me again. Oh my Lord, it was about to happen to me again, and I collected myself. Thank you. But please guard me and bless me so that I don't do this again and again. And this is the prayer of a devotee. Always begging for the Lord for his shelter. Always begging. So that at the time of death, we don't think of deer. And we don't think of anything that is equivalent to the deer. The only thing that we think of is Krishna. And we can do that only if we practice to do that throughout our lifetime. So if such a high consciousness of Jagat Bharat can fall down, then we are also, you know, prone to victim. So we have to increase our consciousness, Krishna consciousness, varying time at every moment. Yeah? Okay. How many stop here? Any corrections, comments, questions?
Few of the kids at very young age, they get attached to the devotion to Krishna. So they have their previous account, and that accumulates on like many births. So like in the beginning they have no devotion, nothing. So in the beginning there is no devotion, and after that they get to the point like when they start generating their consciousness. And after many, many years, they reach to the point where they can say they are some sort of consciousness in them.
Mm-hmm.
But as Bharat Maharaj said, he fell in one world.
Yeah.
So when actually the person he say, I'm ready, please Krishna take me to your place. So when is that level of consciousness comes?
Okay. So your question is, you know, we see that in some times, you know, in a young age people take it and they don't take it. Sometimes in old age they take Krishna consciousness and they don't. And in case of Bharat Maharaj, you know, in your words you said in the first line, in the one line, he reached to almost the perfection stage, but he couldn't perfect it and he fell down. So then the question is, at what life and at what point in time we know that our consciousness is, or let's say our consciousness has been qualified to go back to Godhead. Is that your question? Yeah? Just one small correction before I answer that question. It's not necessary that Bharat Maharaj, when he, you know, went to the Bhava platform, that was his first life. And I think I said that at the beginning of the story. That is the first life that is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, as far as I understand. But that does not necessarily mean he didn't have a life before that. You know what I mean? We are looking for three lives here of a person. And we know there was no fourth. Because he became Krishna conscious and went back. But whether there was anything before that, I personally don't know. But that's not the point anyway. That was not the fundamental part of the question. Your question was, when do we know that we have, you know, become fully Krishna conscious? So, see, there are different levels of consciousness. And different types of bodies have been given different levels of consciousness. Consciousness means cognizance, means awareness. Like I'm aware of time, I'm aware of the news, I'm aware of my body, or I'm aware this is my family. So there is awareness. No? So consciousness means awareness. And Prabhupada explains that the highest level of consciousness, highest level of awareness is Krishna consciousness. And what does that literally mean? Well, not literally, what does that practically mean? Practically that means that whatever we see, whatever we hear, whatever we touch, whatever we feel, whatever we eat, whatever we do, whatever is all Krishna, 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 Krishna. You get the point? Once we reach that stage, that means we are fully Krishna consciousness. And at that stage, you know, when we are thinking, at our stage, what is happening at the sadhaka, when I say our, for my, yeah, I mean to say my stage, at my stage, I generally try avoid using my or I, because it's pretty much it, as you say now. So, we are supposed to be, now, let's say there's a circle of consciousness, okay? And that is all Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And within that Krishna consciousness, there is a center in the circle which is fully saturated Krishna consciousness. It's like your Krishna consciousness is in your blood. It's flowing in you. You're breathing, it's coming out of Krishna. You're breathing in, it's coming in Krishna, like that. So there is a concentration of the circle. Now within that circle, there is all Krishna as well. But getting a little looser and looser as we get to the circumference of the circle. Outside the circumference of the circle is known Krishna consciousness. Other things, which is rubbish, eating, sleeping, eating, and defending, and other things, you can explore. It's outside the circle. Okay, so that is what we are not supposed to be thinking and doing and feeling and being aware. We are supposed to bring our consciousness and mind inside that circle. So what happens for us, our consciousness is generally outside the circle. And we're chanting, we're hearing Bhagavatam, eating prasadam, mingling with devotees, we bring our consciousness inside the center. And then the mind somehow or the other escapes and goes outside the circle. And then we bring it back, it goes out. So that is the fight that we continuously go through, yeah? But at the point in time when our mind has gone inside the circle only and it's not going out, you could say, I have become quite advanced. Although you don't want to tell the public, now I have become advanced devotee. Devotees don't do that. But as a practical measurement, you can know if you are now moving towards Krishna. And then comes a point when your mind is centered only on the center. No, it's like Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Then what happens at that point in time, those allurements that were bothering and damaging and destroying us, that were outside the circle, will no longer come. It will just not come in our consciousness. It just doesn't come. That's it. It's just such a saturated, condensed form of consciousness that nothing can make it fall away. And Prabhupada told you this. Bharat Maharaj shows that how if it's not in the center, but let's say, you know, towards the circumference, what can happen? What's the risk? It's fatal. But if somebody is in the center, like Prabhupada, then the outside things just doesn't touch him at all. Now, even if it comes, so there is two things. The material desires come, and we control it. There is, let's say, us. Sadhakas, beginning practitioners, material desires will come and we control it. But for an advanced pure devotee, the material desires does not come. You get the point? And then you know you are Krishna conscious fully. Now, so there is no litmus paper, you know, or the swabs that somebody will put in the nose to say you are now Krishna conscious. Okay? It's a self assessment. And we know what we think of. Somebody said, if you know what you all are thinking of at the moment, and if you all knew what I'm thinking of at the moment, none of us will see me. We'll probably run away. Because so many other thoughts are coming in our mind. What will I do after the Bhagavatam class? What will I do now? All these things are coming in our mind. So it's not for somebody else to tell us, you know, what our consciousness is. We know it. It's a self-assessment. So if you know that you are continuously thinking of Krishna only and nothing else, then you know you're in the message. But we know we're not there. Don't we?
Like, when complete consciousness comes, is it like announcing your belief?
Say it again, please.
So, when they say complete consciousness, is it like you renounce everything and then you do only Krishna chanting?
Not only Krishna chanting, you think of Krishna only, you do everything. There is Krishna consciousness. But you think of Krishna in everything. So there is two things. We do things and then think of Krishna. That is real. That is which mostly of Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 and 5. That you do your activity and then think of Krishna. That is karma yoga. Whereas in bhakti yoga, you think of Krishna and then do the activity. So that is proactive. For example, you know, let's say, I'll give you one practical example. If you want to, you know, offer your food to, you offer. Yeah? So when we are offering our bhoga to the Lord, let's say at a more junior level, it will be what we want to be. Then we prepare that and we open it to the Lord. So that's nice, but it's a little reactive. You know? I wanted to eat pizza, and I made it for you to look. Whereas in the proactive stage, when we work, we wake up and we think, what does the Lord feel like making today? And then we think, he likes chapati or sabji or pizza, and then we make it, and then we offer it to him, and then we praise bhakti yoga. You see the awareness first, you see the practical example, the awareness in even your cooking was Krishna first, then I took the revenge. Not that I like pizza today, and then I offer it to the Lord, so that's not fully Krishna consciousness, that was my belly conscious. Because I wanted pizza. You get the point? So it's a personal thing. So you still eat the pizza, by the way. It's not that you only sit down and change. It's not that. You still eat the pizza in your lasagna, and your chapati and rice, and sabji. But the Lord comes first in bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness, Krishna awareness, to the point that awareness of what you would like to eat today. And then party. So that's fully Krishna consciousness. Yeah? Also, thank you for your time. Thank you for your questions and participation.